tell you something. You know, we are in a world of you know, I never once in the million times I interviewed Bill Bell and Agnes and Doug and Jim Riley, never did one of them ever complain about being overworked, that they couldn't keep up with it. They may have thought it, they never would have said it, but I don't think they ever really believed it. These guys, you know, to look that you've got three, but the equivalent of three head writers on a soap opera?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Welcome to the Daytime Confidential Podcast. Today we have a very special guest with his second appearance on the show, Mr. Michael Logan from TV Guide Magazine.
Hey,
Michael, welcome back.
Well, thank you for welcoming me. Does this make me a regular now, a semi-regular, a recurring player?
You're Heather Locklear. You're special guest star.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Well, we want to jump right in. We've got so much to cover, but we want to get your thoughts on all that's going on in this wacky world of soaps that we all love. Let's talk first about World Turns, which just wrapped its run after 54 years. Everyone's been weighing in, having been one of the most respected critics in the industry for many, many years. What are your thoughts on the end of As the World Turns?
Well, I thought I expected it to be pretty much what it was, and I was as happy as one can be with what it was. I mean, of course, when you look at all the years and all the characters, and some people, of course, got real short shrift, but others were, I think, beautifully represented at the end. And you know what I'm more really respected out of everybody on that show is really from the point of cancellation. They didn't roll over and play dead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they kept this show firing on a whole lot of cylinders right to the end, introducing new stories, new characters, new situations. They were acting like they weren't canceled. And I really admired that and appreciated that because, you know, having, you know, watched a lot of shows go off the air, damn few of them did this, you know. I mean, Passions, mm-hmm. you know, pretty much gave up after it got, the axe from the DirecTV people. And, you know, Santa Barbara, God, what that show was at the end of its run compared to what it was in its glory days, it was unrecognizable. And you know, we've seen that more often, that scenario play out. So I was really appreciative of the fact that they hung in there, I think, really well and did some wonderful, warm, without getting all treacly, stuff at the end to tie up enough stuff. I can understand the fans who, you know, apparently there are a lot of people very pissed that Reed had to die. I thought it was great drama. I really did. And there's no way to please everybody. I would have loved to have seen Lisa get a lot more attention and respect at the end because, man, you know, she was this show for a very, very long time. But I can't argue with putting the focus on Dr. Bob and Kim. I mean, they just did it beautifully, and a lot of right moves were made. So, you know, I applaud them.
Well, one thing that we've been talking about that kind of, you know, not really shocked us because the ratings have pretty much been reflecting it for a while, but their last two rating cycles, they were killing. I mean, they were killing in the ratings. It wasn't like Guiding Light that kind of had that, you know, boost after Grant Alexander came back and then kind of spiked at the end, but nothing really noticeably. I mean, As the World Turns has pretty much been kicking the, you know, the lesser evil stepsisters at ABC, you know.
Sure.
They've been kicking their butt for a while. I mean, what does that mean? And I mean, it might not mean anything in correlation, but what does it say when a soap that just got canceled was, you know, beating, you know, three of the other soaps in total viewers and in households, you know, its last, you know, couple of weeks on the air.
Well, I do think getting back to the fact that they did have some pretty strong story and were, I think, putting out some stuff that you really wanted to watch. I mean, they just got a few more people tuning in and, you know, people knew the show was coming to the end and wanted to check it out, you know, I mean, and just kind of be there for the, you know, for the end of things. I mean, I sure did. I know many people who had such a spot in their hearts for this show in particular that had to be there, you know, that had to be there. So maybe there's just some of that. Some of it, as we always know, it's all about story. And, you know, it was certainly stronger than other shows. Hard to say. We never know why things go up, why they go down. You know, we try to make these things make sense, but, you know, we're just guessing. You know, we're just guessing. But, you know, one thing that I think we all need to see is that ratings can indeed go up. That's what we desperately need to believe again. And I don't think all that many people who make these shows really do. I mean, the best that they hope can happen is to stop the erosion, and even that's become kind of a pipe dream. You know, I mean, it's good to see that the ratings can go in the right direction, and we need that. We need to know that. We need to know it's possible.
Michael, in one of the magazines, Noelle Beck admitted that she was going to step down from the role as Lily and let Martha Byrne come back in on the role so fans can have some sort of closure, so it could just be one last hurrah for As the World Turned viewers. Yeah. But she was told that's not going to happen. Like, both ladies were told, nah, that's not going to fly. What do you think of Goutman vetoing Martha's return back?
Well, I guess we need to go all the way back to the fact that he was willing to let her go. I mean, obviously there are issues there, and I don't think Martha probably made her situation any better after she was out of there. It didn't surprise me that he chose not to do that. He honored an awful lot, you know. I completely understand the Lillian Holden fans and the fans of the show who would be very pissed that if they had had an opportunity to reunite them and chose to pass on it, that they, you know, I can completely understand why people would be angry about that. But it didn't surprise me, and I think it's very lovely of Noelle Beck, you know, to have done that. She's a supremely gracious lady. I've known her for many years, and just lovely, lovely, lovely person.
Yeah.
And for her to do that was just the coolest, I think. And for Goutman to not take her up on the offer, didn't surprise me at all. It didn't surprise me at all. And I think he went about making as much of it work and tying up as much as he could, made the choice not to tie it up for Lillian Holden. And, you know, I'm frankly okay with that. I'm not one of those people who needs to see everybody all happy and heading off on vacation. I like to see the fact that things were okay between them, just as with Luke and Noah. Not a reunion. It would have been premature and completely out of place to have made that happen. And the same thing would have been the case, I think, with Holden and Lily having, you know, what? He was getting ready to marry Leslie Kay, you know, 1 month before. I mean, if they had put them all together and said, you know, hey, look at us. We're happy at last. I think it would have been incredibly dishonest. So,
But don't you think in that regard, though? I mean, it was great having Leslie Kay back, but at the same time, they knew since December. It's like, to me, you have Holden and Lily. They should have been reunited at the end just as much as Jack and Carly, if not more.
Well, and perhaps the fact that they did not have Martha Byrne in the part is really what that was all about. You know, they wouldn't really, really be reuniting Holden and Lily. They'd be reuniting Holden with, you know, the pretend Lily, and maybe the, you know, that choice. I don't know for a fact if that was it, but I, you know, perhaps it was that you know, that they felt probably wisely that you know, to play it for drama, leave them on an up note, a note of possibility, of hope, just as with you know, Luke and Noah. You know, no reunion there, but everybody talking and going to be emailing, and, you know, who knows what the future holds, you know, and you know, you got a lot of people who are damaged goods that got put together there. I mean, does anybody, you know, really think Barbara and Henry are, you know, a team for the millennium?
Listen, I do. I absolutely do. You do not mess with Henry and Barbara.
I think they're cute, but yeah, I'm with you. I think that eventually, you know, some dashing hedge fund manager will come along and sweep Barbara.
Exactly. You know, Emily and Paul, come on.
Oh, well, they shouldn't have been together.
Oh, Emily will trap him in a bear trap next year. I mean,
these are wonderfully screwed up people, and we've watched their, you know, deep dysfunction, you know, with great enjoyment over the years. You know, I don't think that you know, we really, you know, in our heart of hearts, believe everybody's going to go off to be happy. But for those of us who like to sort of leave it open ended and wonder and think and still sort of keep them alive. You know, I think that kind of the various ways these relationships ended was a nice, you know, cross section, you know, I was fine with it. I really was.
Okay. Speaking of keeping things alive, Michael, one of the things that we see a lot in our comments, and it's kind of, you know, again, like you said, we're only guessing, or, you know, and a lot of times we hear one thing, and it's you know, it'll be someone with an axe to grind, and it's not a clear picture, but. In terms of Procter & Gamble and their future with, well, we know they're staying in the television business. They've, you know, done a couple of movies with NBC. They're partnering with America Ferrera to do a telenovela-style show for MTV. And they also sponsored Buppies. I mean, they sponsored our beloved Buppies that we adored. You know, CoverGirl did that. So we know that they're still in the market for using scripted product to sell their brand. But for our readers, their biggest concern is these characters that they've cherished for 70 years or so. And the news came that they were going to be taking their classic soap content off of Hulu and YouTube. And it just makes you wonder, but then, you know, Mindy Lewis, the character, is still tweeting, and Susan Dansby in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here in my hometown, she revealed that she's going to be finishing up Luke and Noah's story on the P Classics blog. So from your perspective or anything you've heard that you might could share with us, do you think Procter & Gamble will one day have like a soap-dedicated website where they plan to air their, you know, their shows, or, you know, air the re-airs on their own type of YouTube streaming video equipment? Or what do you think? Do you think they're just totally done with these characters? Or do you think that, because I guess my question is, or my what I'm wondering is, wouldn't it be better to just do a clean break than to still have Mindy tweeting in Another World Today? And I mean, what do you think their thinking is on that?
Well, I don't know that they are thinking, and that's been, you know, P&G's problem for quite some time here. I think this is just, you know, them jerking off and basically giving, you know, giving the audience a little something here to sort of carry it on. You know, I was so deeply offended by that statement that they put out, I think it was the day the show went off the air, about how they had wanted to keep the show on one more year and CBS didn't want to. And I'm thinking, like, that was your goal? You wanted to keep the show on 1 year? What about for fucking ever? You
know? Yeah.
This is what are we now supposed to feel sorry for you people? Are
right.
we supposed to, you know, I think the first round when Guiding Light died or was what had been canceled, and remember they said, oh, we are looking at all avenues and we're going to be, you know, talking to so and so and so and so, and we're doing everything we possibly can to keep this thing alive.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, of course, as we know, happened. They then made the same kind of announcement when the As the World Turns axe dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, did any of us believe?
Oh, no. Fool me once.
You know? I mean, we didn't even give it
no.
a thought. It was, this show's dead, and we proceeded accordingly mm-hmm. to write about it that way, cover it that way. We learned our lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these people are completely full of crap. And I don't think anybody, I mean, it's not, I don't think this is an issue or a problem with Mindy still tweeting or whatever they choose to do with Luke's story. I mean, if you care, you'll go and look at this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the planet won't give a crap. So, you know, I mean, it's like, let them do it. But I think it's, you know, it's just their latest effort to blow smoke and make us think that they cared. You know, the day these shows were doomed was the day they let Mickey Dwyer Dobbin go and never replaced her with another programmer.
I've heard that.
Procter & Gamble Televest did not have anybody going to bat on behalf of those shows and that company with CBS. I'm not saying Mickey would have saved the shows, but I'll tell you, she would have fought to the bitter end to save those shows. There was nobody on a programmer level, nobody with any balls, nobody with any experience defending those shows and defending the audience. And that was when it all started collapsing. And so now, anytime somebody, Jeannie, whatever her name is, that's head of the, you know, publicist or, you know, PR department over there, whenever she puts out one of her statements, and I believe she was the one that put out the, you know, we wanted to do it one more time, she just didn't. I was like, lady, stop it, you know? it's like this, you know, these people don't deserve to be in business as far as I'm concerned. I'm really sorry the shows have gone. If I could turn back the hands of time and know what we know now, I think a whole lot of different we could have a very different result. But I don't feel sorry for any of these folks. I really don't. Their PR at the end of As the World Turns was a disaster. On every level, it was an absolute horrendous disaster. And I don't feel bad for any of them, and I don't believe a word that ever comes out of their press releases.
Michael, you have a spot on the podcast for life with that. I love it. Love it.
You know, it's sad. You know, it's really, really sad when we see, you know, it's very easy, I think, to blame the quality of the shows is the reason the audience has gone away. And of course, much of it has to do with that. But these people haven't fought, you know, they haven't fought the great fight, and anybody, you know, telling you they have is lying.
I firmly agree with you.
One of the things we have to look forward to is Maura West going to Y&R. They snapped her up right quick, and Leslie Kay's going back to B&B. What do you think of Maura West at Y&R, and where do you think other people might end up, or if they will?
Who, me?
Yes.
Haven't you heard enough out of me? Let's talk here. I want to know what Jillian thinks. I want to know what my arch nemesis thinks.
Now, unless you like that stupid storyline with Sean Young, then yeah, you will be.
I'll wait till we get there. I'm very excited that, you know, about people are already getting work, and I'm sure many, many more will. And it'll be, you know, it's good. It's good. These are our great, great stars, and they should not be on the unemployment line, you know? I mean, they you know, they need to be on television. It's like Zimmer, you know, coming to One Left to Live. There's something wrong when Kim Zimmer's not on television. You know?
I know.
I mean, it's like that's, you know, so people are finding them and realizing the value. And, you know, I hope more get gigs. You know?
Do you think Maura West actually, that was the right role for her as Diane? Or do you think Y&R should have cast her in something else?
Well, I think that she comes in with, I mean, explosively with Victor and Aunt Jack, you know.
What do you mean?
I mean, what more do you want? I mean, I don't think we need new. We don't need any more new characters on Y&R.
No, that's true.
You know? I don't know. You got a recast that would have been better. I mean, this is good dynamic central stuff that bring her in, and Michelle Stafford and Nikki, and you know, I mean, you got her coming into four power players right there. So that sounds good to me.
You know, Monday morning quarterback is an easy thing to play, but I would have thought Grace, you know, Nick, old, you know, slut hoe bag that was Sharon's best friend, simply for an age thing. I mean, it seems like Dyad is the rapidly desorassed character, you know. It's like, you know, next year, like, you know, one of the little Demi Lovato is going to be playing Dyad Jenkins before it's all said and done. It's like, you know, the next Dyad Jenkins just got born in some hospital somewhere. It's like, you know, it's the only desorastic role in daytime. I don't get it, but
I mean, like, we have Hogan on that show. Remember Hogan Penn, the ladies going old. So I guess Hogan's like, I'm going to throw her a bone and make her young again or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, since we're already on Y&R, we, you know, let's just go right into Y&R. Last time we had you on, Michael, we were all in pretty much agreement that Y&R was just, you know, not even worth paying your cable bill for. But
technically, you don't even have to do that, considering you can get it for free.
Where?
In broadcast.
Oh, okay, Luke. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke,
for that insightful addition to the conversation. It seems to have improved a little bit since we talked last. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. At the same time, I think there's, you know, still an awful lot there that, you know, has me, you know, shaking my head and disbelief. I mean, I wasn't into Chance. I wasn't into Ronan. I wasn't, you know, I mean, all this stuff. I was like, you know, but I got to admit, I was shocked that he was alive.
You were?
I don't nose around a lot in plot, you know, unless I happen to be writing about something that happened. No, I don't nose around if I don't have to. So I was, you know, I was surprised they took that route. Maybe I'm the only one on the planet who was.
I don't care
about any of that. Bringing Cricket into that mix seemed, you know, kind of peculiar. And, you know, I mean, I want to find out about the Cricket that, you know, started making out with Nick after one
year.
I want to find out what's going on with that Cricket. You know,
she's just a big hoe. No,
that's the story I want to see written about here. But you know, but it's definitely improved. And I listen. If you know, Nicky Newman has a storyline, I'm there.
Well, I know Jillian is not a fan of that story.
Hell no.
So take it away, Jillian. What do you thought the Catwoman drugging Nicky Newman?
Look, I am not, you know, if anybody follows me on Twitter, Michael, you need to get on Twitter because that's when I really act up. But I do not like it. I don't love it. I want it gone. I'm just like, it should have been her that was popped. It should have been Maggie that was popped instead of Chance. And that's saying something because I think Chance is dull as dishwater. I just don't. I mean, yes, I'm glad that my Nicky Newman has a storyline, but really? At the altar of Sean Young? Really?
Forget it. She's at the altar of Deacon Sharp, and that is worth it.
I
have to say I like it. I didn't think I would, but I don't mind it. I mean, it's classic soap. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I grew up on, some woman slowly, you know, causing someone to drink.
You know, this is the biggest mistake they ever made with Nicky Newman is giving her a job, giving her a point in the world. Mm-hmm. When Bill Bell was writing Nicky Newman, all she did was stay home all goddamn day,
mm-hmm.
crying, being miserable, walking down the stairs every morning with a new hairdo.
You know, 6 o'clock in the morning with an updo.
Miguel comes in and asks her what she wants for lunch, you know. I mean, and Nicky stayed home and had the best storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided that, you know, because in this day and age, all women got to be empowered, all women got to have a job, all women got to be proven, you know, they're more than that. And when they started putting her in business and, you know, putting on the board of this and the board of that and running this, and, you know, I mean, that was the biggest mistake they could have ever made with Nicky Newman. And so I like the fact that she's now back, you know, home where she belongs. And Maggie, who is, you know, Sean Young's acting like she's on the Secret Storm 1954.
Yeah. Her hair looks like the Secret Storm of 1954.
She is channeling this performance in from someplace else altogether. It is ludicrous, of course, that she starts spiking Nicky's, you know, ginger ale with some vodka, you know, that kind of thing. And the next thing we know, Nicky's hooked. It's ludicrous. But I love it. And I love the other day, like when Nicky goes to, you know, pour herself some vodka, and she pours herself like half a tumbler of vodka. She's not taking any of these dainty little girl sips, you know, and I'm thinking, like, what kind of party do they throw over at Ed Scott and Melody Scott's house? I'm gonna get my ass invited over there, because these people know how to.
She was tossing them back. She was really tossing them back. You know, you think a little drizzle. I was like, damn, Nicky, what is up with that? But, okay, the storyline, this is my problem with it. In order to create a storyline for the character of Nicky, you have to wait until Sean Young is put into the mix. This could have been done with anyone, you know what I mean?
Of course.
It could have been, you know, where Nikki's stressed out because Victor's treating his kids like second-class citizens. She just gets tired.
How dare you, Sean?
Adam could have been involved
movie.
Somehow.
Adam could have been
she
involved,
was
yeah.
My movie. The man came back and I wanted her. How dare you? How dare you?
God. Oh, God. But you know what I mean? Like, it could have been something different. You know, Nikki could start feeling the urge to drink again because of Victor. It could have been Adam. It could have been something else. But Sean Young.
Hell, it could have been Abby.
Well, that has not helped Maria Arena Bell cast people from the Promises Treatment Center at Malibu. None of those suggestions is going to help her fill her quota. Now, I done told y'all. But now, speaking of actresses who come to a new show to help vets get story, Kim Zimmer, it was you. She talked to you about that. That she said that she's okay if that's what she's there for. Personally, I think, you know, I know a lot of fans are afraid of that. I see it every day on our board. But again, you know, if it gets Dorian and Vicky a story other than Tuck Watkins coming back and causing them the Facebook fight, I'm cool with it. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely great. You know, it's going to be a situation that gives Erica Slezak a lot to do, gives Clint a lot to do, gives Brian Kerwin a lot to do. Dorian will be in the mix. Zimmer's the perfect fire starter for that bunch. And I think the show needs these people to be, you know, to be front and center again in a big, good, juicy way. It's been too long, and this will do it. And there's some nice history there. Unfortunately, it's like so far. I mean, this is before my time now. Officially, Kim Zimmer, you know, and what she did in her day on the show is now, you know, before my time of even paying attention to this particular show. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it means, you know, really anything, you know, in a historical sense for the audience, although I'm sure they'll remind everybody, you know, who and what Echo was, but just coming in fresh. If she's just coming in as, you know,
it's kind of like with Linda Dano, when they resurrected her character from, you know,
exactly. Yeah. It's almost like coming in, you know, it's been so long, may as well come in.
And who knows what happens to a person in 30 years. Reagan, you haven't had much to say. Were you watching back when Echo was echoed about?
No, I do not remember Kim Zimmer at all, but I'm excited to see her because I don't watch many CBS soaps, and I only know of her just iconic stature in the soap world. So
I'm the slut of Springfield in the fountain, as Jamie reenacts periodically.
So I'm very excited, though. And I like when Vicky and Dorian are, like, really front and center. This whole Facebook thing with David and Clint is just so stupid.
Well, speaking of stupid, what they've done with Kelly Kramer has been so bad. And Michael, that's one thing we'd love to get you to weigh in on.
The guiding light transplants?
No, well, yeah, just... You know, I'm a little trepidatious because, you know, and it hadn't just been One Life to Live. A lot of the shows, Maria Arena Bell has been very guilty of the snatch and grab of people.
Snatch and grab bandit.
It's not like, as much as I didn't like the Jody Walker story on Santa Barbara when Kim came on there, I ended up liking the character. I just didn't like the story. You know, Cruz is suddenly... You know, this woman we've never heard of was really the love of his life. So, but you know, at least it was a story. Now it seems like they just grab people and don't know what to do with them, and then they don't have a real story for 6 months to a year. So what do you think can be done to salvage poor Gina Tognoni's stint? I mean, she turned down Y&R for this, and why, we make fun of Y&R, but at least it's the number one show. She probably would have got a few more bucks in her pocket. I mean, what are they doing with Kelly Kramer?
Well, you know, and this is, as you recall, remember how they had hired her and she didn't even show up for months and months and months on this show? This was a really early, announcement, you know, with Tognoni.
Mm-hmm.
So they had plenty of time to do this right. You know, this wasn't like, you know, Bradley Bell does it, you know, grab the hot available hunk and cast him and then figure it out later.
We never see him again.
And then, you know, next thing you know, he's Antonio Sabato, and, you know, he came and went and never you know, matter to the show at all. I
mean, Mario Lopez.
Brad Bell's got a long laundry list of people he's done that to, and I'm always immediately suspicious whenever he casts that way again, because, you know, we've seen that happen. But, you know, ABC had, plenty of time to make this happen, so I don't know, you know, or Carlo Vatti, I guess, did. So I don't even know what to make of it, and at this point, I guess anything can turn around with a great story, but it does feel like she's kind of, I don't know, she's kind of like a nuisance. Like every time she's on the air, and get off. And I'm thinking, like, this used to be such an exciting actress, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when she was really on fire in Springfield, I mean, she was just mesmerizing, and she deserved those Emmys and then some, you know. I mean, so this is like, I think it's a greater crime when it happens to a talent like that. I think that's why we're talking about it here. It's not just one more misfire, one more, and it didn't work, so what the hell, you know. It's like when you've got people of this caliber and it goes south is when it's really so shocking. And, you know, but a good story will do it, but, you know, do they have one? We'll see.
What are you thinking, that possibly the addition or the return of Joey Buchanan that's coming up? They're casting Joey. Do you think that might be able to help streamline her story?
It could, sure. Anything could work, you know. Anything could work. On paper, yeah.
I just am a little bit worried, because it's like John Driscoll was a Guiding Light star. His role wasn't very well done. Gina Tognoni went back to One Life to Live, and that's been a bomb. It could be, I would say that Jessica Alicia on One Life to Live hasn't been a great success. Daniel Cosgrove went to As the World Turns, and it got canceled, and now he's going to All My
but that wasn't his fault.
I love Zimmer. I absolutely love Zimmer. But if for some reason she were to bomb on One Life to Live, I would say that there would have to be a Guiding Light curse.
Oh, Lord.
Let's blame it
on Ellen Wheeler.
There we go. Ellen Wheeler curse.
That's always the fun thing to do.
When in doubt, just go for it.
Well, speaking of actors from the 80s who went on to do other things, John Wesley Shipp is now coming on to One Life to Live as the Ford's father.
Why are you saying ugh to Mitch Leary?
I'm tired of the Ford brothers. Yeah. It's like they all, you know, we can barely get Destiny and her clan on, and they have the guy who was on The Wire, Frankie Faison, is a phenomenal actor, but you got the Ford brothers are just clamoring up my TV. It's like enough.
I heard the actress who plays Destiny's mom is doing a play, so that's why they haven't been able to write her back in.
I'm liking the Ford character opposite of Langston, now that Langston is sticking it to him. But the other two, especially the one with Star, just, ugh.
I like James.
It's
and
just
Star.
Too infantile.
What are your thoughts on the brothers Ford taking over Landview, Michael?
Well, you know, I think the greatest weakness of this show is its the young people, and they unfortunately emphasize them so much. It's like, you know, emphasizing your least great gift. And I do not think Carlo Vatti's got an ear for these kids. I don't think, because I watch, like, you know, I'm kind of devoted to ABC Family Channel. I watch all kinds of shit on that channel. Despite the fact I'm 200 years old, I love watching. So it's not like,
Reagan.
Yes. It's not like older viewers can't relate to kids and like them and watch them. I don't care about this bunch. I don't care about them. And, you know, I'm interested in Matthew kind of being pulled into, you know, Clint's web. That could turn out to be kind of interesting. But as far as, you know, the new bunch and the Star and Langston and the rest of that.
I think Jamie had a good suggestion about taking and having Langston sleep with one of Star's men or vice versa. I think that would be a good catalyst.
I think Matthew, for me, you know, I can remember back, you know, and I everyone knows this, I want to love this show again, so I'm hoping that old Zimmer magic can redefine some things. But for me, when Matthew got pushed aside for that little girl like in The Pretty Boy.
Nate,
it started,
yeah,
it just, you know, we're starting to see more and more of this, you know. The shallow person in me is like, okay, Matthew, I could definitely see how a Franzian orchestrated focus group would say that the brothers Ford are better looking than, you know, Brandon Buddy or the kid that plays Matthew. And that might, may or may not be the issue, but we are seeming to see, you know, these characters that we love kind of be pushed aside by the brothers Ford. And, you know, and I like the first Ford. I mean, I have the blog post to prove it, but it's like, I didn't think he just necessarily had to be cloned, but I do feel like I'm rooting for this show. I want them to, you know, Lord knows I want them to do good again. And make me want to watch. Let's talk about The Bold and the Beautiful, which does have a lot of good young people at this point. Not they got rid of Drew Tyler Bell.
Oh,
can I just
God.
Make a comment about that? The new kid who's playing Thomas, first of all, he's Tom now. And second of all,
he's always been Tom.
They went and basically cast for Ron Moss's jawline.
He has always been Tom. Stephanie's always called that little boy Tom.
What are your thoughts, Michael, on the new Thomas?
I'm gonna wait and see. Same like at the new Noah, you know. I mean, you gotta cut these kids some slack. I mean, they're young, they're new, they're not coming with a lot of experience. They're just coming with the, you know, as Luke says, the right jaw. You know, I mean that's you know that's kind of, you know, you do gotta wait a little bit. I will, you know, and this is almost really going back to One Life to Live with those kids. One of the things I've noticed over the years is when kids work the best on these shows is when they've got adult problems. You know, that's something Bill Bell always, always, always did. That's something Riley at his best, like when he was turning Sammy into the Sammy we know.
Yes.
These were little people dealing with big, epic, operatic problems. Mm-hmm. And it draws you in no matter what your age is when you kind of get stuck in that, you know, am I going to get a date with so-and-so and who's going to, you know, sing with me in the musical number? You know, it's like you don't care. And the best shows and the best young storylines have always, always kind of just amped up the, you know, the stakes and made everybody care, you know, and I think that's often missing. You know, I think that's often missing. And so I think, for example, Brad in doing the whole thing with Hope and What's His Face and the masquerade sex and all that kind of stuff. Those are big people problems. Those aren't teenager problems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wacky and trashy as it is, you know, I loved it, you know, and that makes you care. But there's been on B&B, you know, I mean, you need good acting, and the poor guy who somehow mysteriously won an Emmy that then got fired, you know, I mean, that was never working. We all knew it. And, you
right.
know, and so I'm all for a recast, and let's see what, you know, let's see what this kid can do, and, you know, give him some time, you know, and it all depends, you know, it's like these kids I always look back to, you know, young Martha Byrne working with Liz Hubbard, working with, you know, I mean, they need people to pull them along. They need people to, you know, to mentor them, to bring them up to an appropriate, good, entertaining, artful level. And that always makes a difference with these young ones, you know,
well,
they wind up getting stuck with, you know.
Well, not for nothing. I understand what you're saying, but I think in the case of Scott Clifton and Don Diamont, the reverse is happening because that young man is pulling up his A game.
Oh, I'm with you. Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Clifton has been just, I mean, I've always enjoyed him, but.
Yes.
And he came onto the show as if he'd, you know, just taken a crash course in brilliance, you know? I mean, he's just coming
from Tony Gary.
Whole other place, you know.
Tony Geary taught him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, what are your thoughts on Susan Flannery's big story? You talked about that in your column. That could be a game changer.
Do you have anything to dish?
Well, in terms of what's really actually going on with this, no, I do not, and I sure as hell wish I did. I do know that Susan would not do an interview with me about this. Which may or may not be telling. I don't know. I've interviewed her often in the past. I was surprised that She wouldn't talk about this, but this is not, from what I understand of this story, somebody that, you know, is being kind of forced into, you know, something they ain't going to want to be doing. I mean, this is, you know, they got her riding the damn roller coaster. I mean, it's like, you know, she's out there, you know, they're doing tons of location stuff, this whole kind of wacky bucket list thing they're doing. I mean, this is a huge epic thing that Brad's got underway here. So this isn't like some sort of quick, fast way to get rid of her, if that's what anybody's thinking. But, you know, at the same time, we've seen her quoted as talking about retirement. Susan has always done life her way, so it wouldn't surprise me if this is maybe a let's build it up, and then maybe she'll decide whether she's going to stick with the show or not, and then there can be a miraculous recovery. Or if it isn't, then, you know, we have Stephanie go to heaven. But I think it's awfully harsh. I think it's harsh and cruel and scary, and this whole stage 4 cancer thing and not taking treatment for it is very, very uncomfortable, and not uncomfortable in a good way. You know, I'm all for, you know, storytelling that, you know, makes you squirm and makes you go dark places you don't want to go to. But this is just, I don't know how they can put a wacky, you know, Brad actually was, you know, in my interview with him, said this is going to be a hell of a lot of fun to watch. And I'm like, man, if you can pull this off, holy crap, you know?
Yeah.
This is a whole other kind of arena they'd be going into.
I could just imagine you in that interview, because when I read it, I was like, how the hell is this going to be fun? I'm like, she has stage 4. I don't see nothing fun about that.
Yeah, except I was staring at, we ran it in the magazine version of the item. You know, I'm staring at a photo of Flannery and K.K. Lang in the front row of the roller coaster at Santa Monica Pier, like coming on down, you know, and I'm looking at that part of the story too, you know, and seeing what they are in fact doing. I mean, when she throws, and this was explained to me, I don't know that this was, I ever caught this point or they're just making it up now, but they claim that it's been established that Stephanie will not allow herself to have a birthday party thrown for herself and the family. I don't know. But anyway, they're claiming that's the case. So she's going to throw herself one on her own terms with a silly slide coming down the, you know, the Forrester steps, and everybody's got to get on it. You know, they're doing a lot of goofy stuff, which sounds like it could backfire horribly or not. But, you know, I mean, so this is going to be very dangerous stuff. I'm really looking with interest at how the hell they're going to do this and pull it off and what it's all going to be and where it's going to take us. But, man, my jaw dropped.
Yeah, well, I know one thing that hit my mind, and, you know, I get, you know, I'm sure Brad, you know, I've never heard anything but the nicest things in terms of show management and being a stand-up guy. So I'm hoping that he would have had conversations with Susan about this, because, of course, with Colleen Zink Pinter, I mean, I'm still getting used to that. Of course, with Colleen Zink, when they had the oral cancer storyline written in, it was her choice. But given that Susan is a breast cancer survivor, you know, it just kind of took me back, like, to think, you know, would she want to relive that, you know, in the character? But it should be, I think it'll be good. You know, that's one thing about Brad Bell. He's one of those people that when I'm hard on him, it's like, I feel like it's because I know what he can do and what he can, and how much better. And I feel like in the last couple of years, he's kind of just written the show to that telenovela audience that, you know, they love to talk
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, he's not consistent. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
He can take the show into some very, you know, slow, sad periods of unwatchability, but he always pulls it on back and does stuff nobody else would dare, and gets us to feel stuff and experience stuff and watch stuff that other people aren't trying. I think he's one of the only people with real balls in the business anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I never count him out, you know? I never count him out, so much so that this, to me, on paper, sounds like a complete mess waiting to happen. But I can't wait to see if he can pull it off.
Because
I've watched him do it before, and, you know, we'll continue to see miracles again, you know? And at the same time, is he just trying to get another Emmy? You know, you got to throw that into the mix. Is this, is this three in a row, you know? I mean, it's and I'm fine with that. I mean, it's at least they're the these things he gets Emmys for are not what General Hospital, those special episodes GH won so many for. I mean, his Brad's Emmy bait is much more, you know, family and story and lore oriented, and you know, that's not so bad.
I'm going to put my money on Brad. I'm going to say that he's going to pull this out because when we all think that he's not, we're just like, oh, God, what are you doing, Brad? Stay away from that computer. He will surprise us and we'll just be there like, wow, this is amazing. I mean, not for nothing, but he should teach his sister-in-law a thing or two about how to craft something.
Nobody said, you know, genius gets passed down in the DNA, and it sure doesn't with a marriage license, you know? I mean, it just, you know, I'll tell you this. So, Brad, you know, I've known him a very long time, and I adore him. I love talking to him. I will find him at a party and hang with him. You know, he's wonderful, wonderful people. And he still approaches this business with pride. It's the family business.
Mm-hmm.
He remembers his dad constantly. He is part of the story with Flannery. We'll all be going back to that homeless story that was one of Bill's, you know, great stories early in the run of with Michelle Davison, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's all kind of echoing back to that, and that'll all kind of be brought in with a new character who I'm kind of guessing is maybe related, maybe a daughter or something of Michelle Davison's character. But, you know, he treasures it. He honors it. He loves it. It's great to see because, you know, you don't see that so much, you know, with Ken Corday and his family business. And there aren't any other family businesses. So for any of us looking, you know, for anybody who's remembering the past and using it to hold them up in these troubled times, it's good to see Brad working this way. You know, he cares.
Well, Michael, I have a pie in the sky, you know, basically I'm asking you to be Frankie Frame here because this is just something that I've always wondered and thought of, and a couple of people have told me, you know, that, you know, and I've even in the magazines that I read, some of the business magazines, I know that the Bells will be at NATP for, like, you know, the Indie Television Awards and things like that, and a little birdie told me that they would, you know, they were in talks at one point for pitching a show to Teen Nick. With the current state of daytime, I've always kind of thought that if tomorrow the networks all said we're done, that YNR and B&B would somehow be the shows that found a new audience, you know, a new place to wear their airs. Do you get that feeling, or do you feel like the networks airing soaps are the only, you know, that once the networks are done, then the soaps are done? Or do you think the Bells would find a way to keep their shows in production elsewhere?
Well, I worry about YNR only because of the Sony connection. You know, that's not clearly a Bell show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And who knows what Sony's thinking, you know, whether they would care. And of course the same thing applies to, you know, their connection to, you know, to Days as well. I think, you know, if we were going to take bets on one show that could survive among them all, if suddenly all three networks decided to close up shop the same day. And believe me, I've had that fantasy. It's weird you should say that, because I've always thought in my paranoid mind that, you know, that might actually happen someday, you know.
Mm-hmm.
B&B would be the one to pull through, you know, because the Bells own it. And Brad's still running it. And there's Bill Bell Jr. And there's, you know, Laura Lee's kind of, you know, the silent, you know, partner in all of this. But, you know, they're very into keeping that family legacy going. And with Lee still with us, thank God, you know, I mean, there's, you know, the empire exists, you know.
Do you
I think that empire might strike back, you know? I mean, with B&B, you know, I don't know that it's possible to do it with YNR, and I don't really quite understand a lot of the business, you know. I just really, you know, who's in charge at any point really with that one. But I think with B&B, knowing its international popularity, that that could be the last one standing.
Do you feel we've talked about, you mentioned how PNG losing a liaison in Mickey Dwyer Dobbin hurt it. Do you feel that had Agnes not sold her shows to ABC and, you know, had Corday and Bill Bell not sold parts of their, so you know, the of Y&R and Days to Sony, do you think that the soaps genre as a whole would be in such a precarious state?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, with the Bells, you had a generational thing. You know, you had the next bunch coming along to, you know, take the torch, whereas Agnes didn't have that. You know, Agnes was just her. I mean, she has a huge family, but nobody went into the soap business. So I think the reality is how long can you, you know, stay tough and do, I mean, I know what you're getting at, but I just don't know that Agnes did anything.
If she had an heir apparent.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of just, it played out the way that it played out, you know, I mean, I've just come from a 3-day, I'm a Disney lunatic, and I just came from this 3-day incredible event in Anaheim, Destination Disney, which was all about, you know, basically the 55th anniversary of, you know, Disneyland, but just the most incredible people came and just the most exciting panels and just wonderful stuff. I was just, you know, complete Disney geek about it. And everybody talked so amazingly about Walt Disney and his vision, and, you know, that goes without saying. And then here comes Michael Eisner. And I think we're in the, you know, we've moved into the Michael Eisner stage with soaps, you know, the people, and I was lucky enough to, you know, come into the business when Agnes was, you know, just cooking with gas and Bill was doing his thing and Doug and, you know, just all the greats and the people who loved it and picked this industry because they wanted to be in it and knew it and, you know, could write it in their sleep. And then, you know, as they slowly, you know, we lost them. The next generation comes along and they're business people, you know, and they're not in it for the reasons the original generation was. And so as a result, we wind up where we are today. You know, I mean, Agnes didn't do anything really wrong. She just didn't have anybody carrying on her legacy. You know, it wasn't going to ever be. And, you know, and it's easy to, you know, yak about Franz, but, you know, there were, you know, there was Pat Philly in there. There was, you know, I mean, there were three or four, you know, people in between, you know, before Franz got, you know, mitts on all this stuff, you know. I mean, so it's never the same, you know, it's never the same, which is why, you know, it's so exciting to see Brad still in the game in his way. And you kind of wish Ken Corday, you know, did the same thing, because God knows he's got the same emotional connection and the same thing at stake. And, you know, I mean, but it's just the generations have turned and now you just don't have... You know, you just don't have those same giants. You know, there are reasons some people are giants. You know, they're fucking fantastic, and you don't have these people now. You know, I mean, I admire. You know, I know I'll get stoned for this, but I admire Guza more than I admire, you know, for all his faults.
I agree.
But for his stubborn vision of what he wanted to make General Hospital.
Because at least he has a vision, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, and a lot of shows just simply don't. I cannot, if I was in front of a firing squad, I could not describe the vision for One Life to Live.
No.
It's
true, you know, but it's true.
No, I
could have described it, yeah. 6 months ago, I could have described it, but now I can't, yeah.
You know, what was the vision for, you know, I mean, a lot of these shows over years got very homogenized. Everything sort of, you know, I mean, when Agnes came along and created One Life to Live, it was about a community, you know, and it stayed strong and stayed about, what it was, as were most of these other shows. I mean, when you came along with a new soap, it had to have an identity. It had to have a reason for being. And
right.
It's like Jimmy Riley with Passions, you know, he came along and made something unlike anything else, say what you will about it, but he had a vision. And what we've had way too many of over the years is people with no vision, you know, or vision that they did have it that was so easily taken from them in the homogenization of you know, the focus groups and the network intervention and all that stuff, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what's the vision of YNR. It's, I mean, it doesn't mean it's bad. It's
TCM!
Good, it's just like, it's a bunch of people and a bunch of plots. But
I can tell you the vision. It's the lineup of Turner classic movies.
We went over this the last time you were on, Michael. Where have you been?
But it's Turner classic movies mixed with every primetime soap opera that Scott Hamner wrote for, mixed with whatever sugar problem Hogan Sheffer gave himself from eating a lot of Twinkies that made him decide he wants to do. It's those three competing visions that are just
mixed with 80s has-been stars. Yes, I said that.
I the other day when I was writing about the Falcon Crest thing, the event that's coming up at the Paley Center, I told Jillian, I was all excited, and I was like, I wrote something like, remember when Richard Channing faked his death because the 13 was after him, the evil drug cartel? Then it hit me. I was like, wait a minute.
Fake Chance.
Drug cartel. I'm like, here we go again. Scott, I'm just doing it again. It's like he's just pulling out his old, like, Falcon Crest and Knot's Landing and Dynasty.
No. I think it's this. I think Maria was like, damn, they busted me on my Netflix account. They hacked into my Netflix account. Scott, it's your turn. And now, you know, you've busted Scott with Chance and all that from Falcon Crest. And Hogan's going to be like, oh, it's my turn, you know. They just, I don't know.
Yeah, three. And why do you need all that when
three head Erna writers?
Phillips, Erna Phillips and Bill Bell and Agnes Nixon wrote all of her shows. You know,
absolutely,
it's like,
absolutely.
Why do you need 75 head writers?
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. You know, we are in a world of you know, I never once in the million times I interviewed Bill Bell and Agnes and Doug and Jim Riley, never did one of them ever complain about being overworked, that they couldn't keep up with it. They may have thought it, they never would have said it, but I don't think they ever really believed it. These guys, you know, to look that you've got three, but the equivalent of three head writers on a soap opera?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And I think, yeah, I agree with you that that's a big part of why, you know, it's just too many cooks in one kitchen. And, but yeah, hearkening back to what you said about Nikki and about how she never should, you know, that was LML who decided Nikki needs to go run clear of Steel Springs. And it's like with Kay, with Maria, and I do firmly believe that that's been Scott Hamner's influence. He turned Kay Chancellor into Angela Channing with this, my empire I built. You didn't build Chancellor Industries. You were drunker than Cooter Brown.
Like, yes. She and Nikki.
Still, I'm like, watched my whole life, and the last big Chancellor story I remembered was Victor being brought there to run Chancellor, and that, you know,
she and Nikki
Chancellor fight, you know?
Yeah, she and Nikki would go to the colonnade room and get wasted, and Marshall, it was Mitchell Sherman that would run Chancellor. I knew he ran Chancellor. I didn't know Kay did.
You know, that was that was Richard Channing and Angela fighting over fucking all my children. Let's go, all my children. They are doing some casting over there. Daniel Cosgrove is in. Adam Mayfield and that girl who played Marissa are out.
Brittany Hartley. Brittany Allen.
Okay, whatever. That baby don't deserve me looking up her name. Lindsay Hartley's in. What do you think they're doing over there? I'm slightly enjoying All My Children. Luke doesn't really like it that much. What are you thinking about it, Michael?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what the hell went wrong, you know, with this whole, you know, getting rid of David, you know. It still makes no sense. And, you know, that whole extra added mystery with the unauthorized spokesperson and Irizarry's semi-kind of denial only. I like the fact he came back and he said, obviously, he caught shit from ABC on this. And so then he had to come out and say, well,
it wasn't authorized.
unauthorized and premature. No, he did not say untrue.
Right. And he ended it, you know, that I felt like I had egg on my face because this person contacted us and was like, I just posted something on Facebook and David, they told me David wanted you guys to know this.
Vincent.
And next thing I know, he done released. I didn't say none of that. That's a lie. And then he said the exact same thing at the end that he said in the Facebook statement. But I'm like, okay, somebody lying. But,
continuing to milk the fan base.
Yeah.
To respond, get them all worked up to, you know, so who knows what the hell any of that is. I just, you know, still, we got to look at what's on air. And yeah. I don't know. It's so hard anymore to get invested in any kind of whodunit where we know, you know, it's like when I talked to Rebecca Buttig, I said, you know, to her, she's like the prime suspect, so we know she ain't guilty. You know, we know shit like this now. I mean,
Ryan will never be convicted of it if he is.
Exactly, you know,
and just did a whodunit with Stewart.
And that's the thing that I don't understand, because I was thinking about this last week. Adam used to be the big bad villain. He's gone. Then it was David as the big bad villain. Now he's gone. We don't even have a villain on the show unless you count JR, and he should be fearing for his life the way this is going.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be that mountain man will be the villain. What's his name?
He's too upstanding.
Caleb,
whatever.
What are you thinking about the show of late?
I think the Balkan did it.
The Balkan.
The Balkan.
We're moving into Reagan's territory.
Oh, God.
Well, Reagan,
hating AMC right now. I do kind of feel like it's my punishment of the week.
Amen.
When I have to watch it. Amen. Yeah. I feel like you're the one punishing me.
Well, I'm punishing myself. There's only one storyline that I'm enjoying.
Greenlee.
No. Greenlee? No, JR and Annie.
What kind of storyline are they getting?
That's the thing. That's why
it's
not
the storyline
we want. It's self-punishment. It's torture.
But I like Ryan and Madison.
Madison's probably the one that killed David, and she's gonna get killed herself.
But the thing about this is as they pointed out, they said this on screen. No one in Pine Valley cares who killed David because no one liked him. And it's
that worked terribly for Dallas.
Well, but it's like. Well, no, but I'm just saying it's like if there's no motivation for these characters to investigate a death, why should we as fans be invested in these characters' reactions?
I just hope whoever they get to play Marissa is better than this chick. They got now.
It'll be somebody from another show. Red Rover, Red Rover.
Sarah Buxton.
It'll be probably Mandy Bruno.
No, I'm going to tell you who it'll be. It'll be Vail Bloom. They'll be like, got you, Marissa. Take that.
I know. It's like, this whole.
Suck on this.
Tag your it mess that these soaps do now.
Can we discuss the fact that Y&R and GH both have shows with characters named Ronan at the moment, both of which.
Yeah,
like,
what's that about? And,
well, someone pointed this out. Y&R has a hybrid. They're like Ronan Malloy Aiden Lansing. That was Ronan's real name. They're like, Maria's been watching ABC and GH. I'm like, oh, God.
So, see, that's the problem. None of them like their own vets. They want to play Nick and Newman every, you know, leap year before this storyline. But she's over there looking and lusting for Jack and Zeman, I guess. I guess she'll come on next week. I mean, it's like, what is the point of that?
Well, and poor Jonathan Jackson sounds like he should be in a Lucky Charms commercial.
I like that story. What do you think about it, Michael?
I don't like it, but I like Jonathan Jackson no matter what. I think he is. I mean, God knows he's appreciated. He's got all his Emmys. He's like, you know, I mean, but it's just like sometimes I just look at him and go, how did you happen? And why didn't you make big in the movies when you left the show?
Because
he had a good start. I don't know what it is. I mean, he's so interesting and good, and the depth is awesome, you know, and I don't know with GH, it's kind of just too much, too many people, too many other places, you know. I mean, it's between weeks and weeks of the nonsense in Rome and Ireland now. I mean, it's like, I don't understand when soaps do that. I'm sitting here, you know, I interviewed Vanessa, you know, Genoazzo, whatever.
That's how we feel.
Sad Vanessa, though.
She says to me, you know, sometimes one of these days we're going to have a talk about just the bullshit that actors and writers and producers hand us in interviews. Because I talked to Vanessa, who I adore, I love her. I mean, I'm like, you know, I have no issues axe to grind with Vanessa, but she proceeds to tell me how she was originally asked to come back with Franco, and she vetoed it because the General Hospital audience wanted to see her with just the core people that she, you know, that Brenda was part of, Sonny, Jax, Jason, Robin. So I ain't seen nothing yet. I don't know what they're doing. I thought everybody's going to be in Rome for 2 days.
Yeah.
I didn't know this was going to go on this long. So I'm thinking, you know, she's handing me some wisdom. Then as I see this start playing out, she would have been lucky if she'd been introduced by Franco.
Yeah.
You know, because this is so snoozy and weighted down in stuff we don't care about that it lost its punch. This has no power whatsoever. And I don't know what the hell she was talking about, you know, because what she did agree to do was far, far, far worse than had she just come in, you know, escorted by Franco into the art show and, you know, he goes away and she stays. I mean, that would have been far better. We just get on with, you know, the Brenda show. But
This
is confusing.
We got hustled, Michael.
Too much. It's like, you know, Guza's my boy. Yeah, I am a card-carrying Guza fan.
So am I.
It felt like he was trying I'm gonna write a really intricate story where we see what Brenda's life has become, and I'm gonna steal stories from Angelina Jolie's real life. Because somebody on Twitter politely told me when I was like, it looks like he's trying to do Brad and Angelina, but nobody ever tried to kill Angelina. They were like, yes, she did get death threats in Gusnapadabam when she was trying to help the babies over there. And I said, well, see, that's my point. It's like, we didn't really, and I'm sorry, I love Brenda, but what world do we live in with these 5 feet supermodels? I'm sick of it. Her and Erica Kane wouldn't get a runway gig nowhere. It's like,
I keep calling her the world's shortest supermodel.
Well, she'd at least be eligible for at least one season of America's Next Top Model, because didn't they have a shorter version of it at least one season?
Yes,
they would get print work, but they would not be runway models. But
it just makes me wonder if Guza is paying attention to Maria, because I'm like, is Maria writing for
you?
I'm like, Maria, what'd you sneak in the poor Charles? Because I'm like, what is this? Like, I'm ready for Brenda to bring her behind home now. Phone home. Jason, take
her
home.
She's coming.
It's 1-800-COLLECT.
Well, what I'm wondering, though, is, now I'm confused with my rooting factor, because it's like,
oh, there's only one couple.
Who?
Jason and Brenda.
No.
I would be, I love Liaison, but I would be 100% fine with them.
Not me.
Oh, yes.
Why? They are fantastic.
They are hot.
But she belongs
with Sonny. That's right.
And he belongs with Elizabeth Fernandez.
He does belong with Elizabeth. I'm not disagreeing with that. But I will settle for them because I'm sorry, that jackass is never going to allow them to give us Jason and Elizabeth.
Okay, whatever.
What do you think about that, Michael? Who should Jason be with?
You know, I don't care about Jason.
I care about
okay, who should Brenda be with in that case?
Only pair I care about is Brenda and Carly.
Oh, that's going to be good.
Getting those two in a room is going to be...
That's going to be dynamite.
If Guza doesn't fuck it up, it's going to be fantastic because Carly has not been able to shut up about
Brenda. It's
going
to be... I hate to say this.
For weeks now, and it's like building incredibly. I can't wait.
I'm not a Sam fan. Everybody knows that. But in terms of actresses, I feel like Laura Wright versus Vanessa is going to give us old school badass, you know, which diva will be left standing. But when I envision in my mind a scene with Brenda versus Sam, I just almost see Kelly Monaco exploding into dust.
Well, when poor Sam sees Brenda for the first time, the stunned look of realization that all she is a clone crosses her face. I mean, you know it's going to instant combustion.
No,
I'm talking acting now.
He's
I'm talking
acting.
I'm not going to get my Vicky Wyndham versus, you know. We're not going to get that. We're going to get, you know, the dialogue will be there, and we'll get Kelly looking out the window. Looking crazy. It's just going to almost going to be murder. That's almost cruel and unusual punishment. She ought to be wishing for Liaison versus J-Sam, because Vanessa is going to eat a lunch.
I think Vanessa's going to
lunchable.
Eat. She's going to tear. She's going to destroy Laura Wright. I'm sorry. I don't know. Okay, Michael, who do you have your money on?
I got my money on Laura Wright.
Amen.
I'm going to tell you something. This is really interesting. This is the kind of stuff, you know, every once in a while somebody does something on a show that you realize, oh, my God, people stop doing this. The fact that Carly has been imploding with rage and jealousy over Brenda and the fact that all the men are doing their thing. You know, we laugh about, all the men and Brenda, all our men. Well, the fact that, you know, they're actually, you know, Guzis wisely, at least with the Carly character, really using that. And she has not been able to shut the fuck up about Carly for weeks now, and it's building and building and building and building. And when you think about the transparency of that emotion, this is the stuff shows used to have a whole lot more of. Mm-hmm. Now everybody holds it in. You know, everybody's like all kind of what they really think and what they put out can be usually very different things. And I like that fact. And I wish Guza would actually use Kelly Monaco suddenly realizing, holy shit, he has never been in love with me.
I was just a blow up.
You behave.
I was just the Brenda substitute, and get into an interesting, identity story
crisis.
About that would be fascinating.
Michael, I'm gonna send you a clip. Do you remember when Carly told her that's what she was when my Tamra Braun was playing Carly?
Yeah,
she told her. She said, "Has Sonny even bothered to mention Brenda yet? Because you look enough alike her to be." You know how she rolled her neck like Tamra had some sister in her.
Yeah.
She was like.
See, that is good stuff, and that's not stuff we see someplace else. You know, everybody's looking for the disease we ain't done, or the, you know,
the
alien invasion we haven't done. You know, I mean, but it's like digging deeper into the human emotions. It's a bottomless place, you know, and it's like they could be doing some really cool stuff here. I don't bet they'll go there, but you know, it's like
that would be interesting.
I think a lot of it is you have only a few soap writers who I feel really want to be soap writers. That's why I cut for Ron Carlovati, I have to
say.
Right. I do feel he did, because he gave up being a lawyer because he wanted to do this. I think Maria Irina Bell wishes she was writing some great, you know, 1940s plot, you know, melodrama. I think Guza, love him to death. Like I said, he's my boy, but if Scorsese called tomorrow,
I was going to say, we will be expecting a special Christmas Boardwalk Empire episode very soon.
No, you know what it's going to be. Sonny, we're going to learn the origins of Mike. Mike will have been on, you know, they'll do a flashback when Mike was a gambling addict on Boardwalk. You know this is coming. Please.
Yeah.
Guza loves HBO. He loves HBO, and Maria loves TCM.
Yes. Those two need, I'm sorry. At least
Rod loves Glee. Let's go out there.
As all three of these are proving, just because you love something does not mean you should try and replicate it.
Yeah.
Well, what does, okay, Michael, what does Dina Higley love?
Ambient.
I don't know, man. You know?
No. 60 Minutes.
Yeah, isn't that where she got that story?
Go ahead, Michael.
I was gonna say, when I heard they were going to bury Vivian, I thought, yippee, this could be fantastic. And it's not. You know?
It's awful.
It's not. It's just a misfire of epic proportions. And so even, you know, even a good idea, you just like, you think like, I don't know what to think. I don't understand the phenomenon that is Dina Higley or Ken Corday. I will go to my grave not understanding it.
And, you and me both.
You know, you know, people think the world of Gary Tomlin over there. I mean, to a actor. They have all privately during interviews, whenever. I mean, people adore him and what he's brought to the show and the attention and focus and his command. I mean, he's a good showrunner. And so people all seem to love that, you know, but that's not enough, you know. That's not enough if the story's not there. And, you know, you've had a, you know, I mean, we were talking about The Curse of the Guiding Light. I mean, look at the you know, Crystal Chappelle.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know? I was right. I mean, there really is a curse.
I'm going to tell you, when I interviewed Crystal for Curve, and she told me that they were going to make Carly more Olivia-esque. I'm going to be honest, a red flag went off in my head then. I was like, Carly Manning was a gothic princess. She was not Olivia Spencer. She just wasn't. And I really think them trying to make her Olivia is, you know, it's almost like she's played the same, you know, and I feel that, I saw that in Venice also. I feel like it's the same angry character that we keep seeing over and over again, that we're not seeing a likable side written to this. It's like, I kind of feel like letting go of Olivia might be her best bet as an actress at this point, because we're seeing it just permeate all of her roles.
She's pigeonholing herself to the max with that.
Yeah. And it's heavy, you know. It's not enjoyable. It's not. There's nothing buoyant about it. It's just leaden. And what worked with another character in another time, in another place, in another partnership, you just can't take that stuff and duplicate it. And I don't know why you would. And getting back to Zimmer, I think, and just kind of bullshitting with her the other day, and hearing a bit about what she's doing and all, I think that might be an exception of somebody who. Because somebody, I mean, listen, her Reva is indelible in our minds. I mean, you know, we have Reva nightmares. I mean, you can't shake Zimmer and Reva together. But I think she's going to come in with something different simply because the situation won't allow any Reva, you know. And when you allow, as I think Days did, for, you know, Chappelle to come in and kind of bring what made her all hot and on everybody's, you know, number one list over there, that they wanted to bring that magic. They wanted to bring, you know, why everybody was buzzing about her, but you know, they didn't do it with skill. They didn't do it with wisdom. No. You know, you got to stand back and go, you know, and you got to know your business, you know? And I think this is inherent talent. This is something that comes from experience and knowing talent and knowing writing and knowing audience and just knowing this shit, and you ought to know better than that you can't go home again. You got to start fresh. And the original, thinking back to what I found appealing about Chappelle on the first round at Days, you're right, she was a gothic character, you know, she was out of a book.
Yeah, a romance novel, a good one, not a harlequin, you know, like a... Yeah.
Weather... What's wrong with harlequin? Oh, shut up.
And now she looks like someone stole Olivia's wardrobe out of PPAC.
Yeah.
Well, wardrobe for me doesn't, I don't care. I mean, let me take that back. If it's Y&R, I care, but, you know, Days
is
never
her wardrobe is not gothic, that's for sure.
But, she's a doctor now. I mean, well, she was a doctor then, but the thing of it is for me with Carly is this. Carly was a romantic heroine.
Yeah.
She was, you know, this whole killing the husband and then coming in and stealing Hope's husband and you know, and really she didn't steal her, but still, it was all just everybody hating Carly and
this
her
ball
being
busting crazy. Carly.
It's just they need to get back to the heart of this character, not Olivia Spencer.
Right.
And you know, remember how great she was when she was buried alive, and what made that work was the unbelievability. The ludicrous situation, but she made it work because she was so utterly believable, and she played the victim brilliantly. And that's another thing, and I think this may still be like kind of like the Nicky Newman's got to go have a job kind of world we live in, is that, you know, the heroine as victim is something that, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's passé now. Maybe it's politically incorrect to, you know, want to go there. Maybe people don't want to write. I don't know what really is going on in our times, but that's sort of what she was able to do in the early 90s. It's kind of like, you know, doesn't fly anymore. Maybe it happens, works only because when you're young and when you're suddenly, you know.
Well, you know, I think it's a, I think you can, I think that you can, there's been plenty. I think Carly was a tragic heroine, but she still was, you know, you can write a tragic heroine that still
has some backbone.
Funky and, you know, look at, what was my girl? Eden. That Eden Capwell was always trying to help.
There you go.
Getting herself messed up. Look at her. Everybody who has any sense references Santa Barbara because it was the baddest. Okay.
Oh, God. But, you know, like, I just think that Carly, the return of Carly has just fell flat. They should have never, I don't know what got in Dina's mind to say, we're going to make her Olivia. Yeah, no, I like the fact
that wasn't Dina Higley. I told you Krista Chappelle told me that Dina is somewhere getting her nails done. She ain't right for that show. But
but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Carly, the reason why fans fell in love with Carly because she had that vulnerability to her. She looked like she, you know, Bo was the vulnerable one out of the two of them in that relationship. Like,
well, that one sex scene was just scary.
Well, speaking of,
Crystal suffers well. That's what she does really, really well. It's got to be carefully handled. But, you know, when you really look back at Guiding Light, it was her silent suffering that was so dramatic.
Yes.
You know, it was the longing, the, you know, I mean, it just drove us all crazy. It was brilliantly done.
Mm-hmm.
That's a special gift. Not a lot of people can do that anymore. That's like kind of old movie time acting. That's like 1950s Susan Hayward kind of acting, you know? I mean, it's a rare, rare thing, and it's got to be like really carefully handled and working in our
She's
time.
Brilliant. But, she really you know, is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's brilliant. Gina Tognoni's brilliant. Yeah, Eden Riegel's brilliant. But we see these brilliant actresses just given these less than stellar, less than thought out parts, and that... They're so busy with the big snatch and grab, they've got to get better with the story. Let's talk a little bit before we close about web soaps. I know that, like us, you love some imaginary bitches. And since Eden and Andrew pretty much broke that mold, we've had a slew of web series come down the pike. Venice is returning soon. The Bay has premiered. Still waiting to hear word on what's going to happen with Gotham, with Martha Byrne. But what are your thoughts on some of the web series that are out there?
Well, I'm excited at the whole concept that people are getting these things done. And, you know, I mean, it's so pioneering, and we get to be kind of like in on the ground floor of it. I think it's very exciting. You know, it's kind of like, you know, what it must have been like to watch TV getting born. You know, it's cool. I'm happy to be here. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's very thrilling. You know, and some of them, you know, are really good, and some of them aren't, and that's going to be true of, you know, showbiz for the rest of time. So, you know, but I love the fact that there are some people who are so clear that the soap stars have special appeal, and that there's an audience out there, and that you cast them and you can promote your stuff. You know, I mean, these people endure, and it's wonderful to see so many people still getting another shot. Maybe they're working for chump change or free. I don't know. I'm sure they all are, but you know, they're still reaching the audience, and I love that. You know, so I'm very excited to see all this. And I think Venice is gorgeously done. You know, I can't. What do they charge? $10? I don't know how the hell they pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the hell they pull it off. That's amazing quality to me.
Have you seen The Bay yet?
No, I have not. I've not seen that one. I've been sort of keeping up on all the, you know, the 10 million soap stars that have been cast on it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. It's like huge.
Yeah, well, you know, they actually, they're going to TV with it, so I think that's part of the whole thing. We're seeing the web of soaps are chapters of the 30-minute show, so we're hoping they both do well this season. We know, before we let you go, one of the times when I was, like, looking at TVGuide.com and going, now, where is Michael's article? I hadn't seen you writing anything in a couple of weeks, and I emailed you, and you had said that you'd been busy covering some primetime shows. So tell us what you're loving and hating, you know, about primetime so far. What are some of your favorites? What are some of the ones that you're like, huh? And what are the ones that you want to see get a longer chance? Or, you know, just what's up with primetime in Michael Logan world?
Well, you know, we just got done, putting out the fall preview and the returning favorites issue, which is, you know, always an interesting time to look and see mostly what the networks are, you know, coming up with. And it's pretty discouraging, I have to say. There's a couple shows that I personally like, but I find that these problems you know we've all been talking about with the soaps, these are not exclusive to our own little wacky serial world here. I mean, you know, these networks have problems. There's so little imaginative thinking, and a couple of the shows that have managed to kind of be created by some outside the box thinking have been kind of the immediate casualties. Lone Star being certainly one of them, not canceled yet, but the ratings the first week were, you know, extremely dismal, and that was considered, you know, going to be the big hit. That's going to be the new Lost.
Yeah.
So it's discouraging when those kind of shows don't, and I wasn't that big a fan of it, so it's not like I'm, you know, I've got no horse in this race, but, you know, but the thing is that it's pretty shocking how uninteresting so much of this product is, and more and more and more we're going to cable. This is where the exciting stuff is being done, where the chances are being taken, where the real talent is going, and it's every season it seems to just get a little bit worse for the networks. You know, people don't want to take the chances, and some of the stuff that you think ought to be good, I mean, William Shatner doing Shit My Dad Says, I mean, it's a horrible show.
Yeah.
Great idea. I love Shatner. I'm not that much into the stuff, and the, you know, but I know it's really popular, so clearly there's an audience out there.
I love the Twitter feed. Thing. But yeah,
well, who, Jamie, you emailed me. You had some casting ideas that you thought who for that?
I wanted the old man who, well, my dream, but he's not really old enough. But I, well, and Curb got renewed, but I thought Larry David, since he's joined the acting realm.
Sure,
but
sure.
I think he, because if you read those tweets and you read the books, it's not a Shat, the real dad is like this grump. He's not a showman like Shatner. He's just like this angry little, and I was raised by a grandfather like that, that just, you know, just was mad all day long. And so Shatner is too showman for this. I mean, I pictured a really grumpy.
What about John Mahoney, the guy who played
John
dad?
Mahoney.
He would be good for that.
Good, but I just think Shatner is just too, I am acting for this part. Yeah, so that let me down. It's, you know, it's like when they did Lipstick Jungle, because I love the book, and I never envisioned any of those women in Lipstick Jungle. And it's like, I need to just stop reading books and stuff, because it's basically whoever gets the biggest name attached to it. And so, you know, who knows what'll happen, you know. That's one of the things where it's like, when you use your imagination to create characters from a, you know, from the book or a Twitter feed, then you know, you're like, oh, and that's the thing, a Twitter feed, like, this has happened so many times. This is like the first time, but it's like, I just pictured his dad being this mean
curmudgeon,
you know, miserly man. And he's also like a brilliant man. I mean, he's like a scientist in real life. And, you know, so I just never would have pictured Denny Crane in this part, but.
Well, we'll see what the audience, I don't know. It's tough going, man. It's really tough. You know, it's hard to get these new fresh ideas through anymore. And they're much more interested at this point in playing it safer. And let's redo Hawaii 5-0, you know, I mean, and not to say that there's not an audience for it. And maybe it's a good show. I didn't care for it that much, but you know, I don't know. It's discouraging because there's so much other great television. We're not starved for great television, you know. We stopped looking at the network stuff, no problem. There's so many other places to go. Glorious, glorious era for television.
Mm-hmm.
But those exciting, I remember as a kid, couldn't wait to get my TV guide for the fall, you know, the fall preview issue.
Yep. And
all summer long with the promos of the new shows coming. I mean, it was like, I could not wait. It was the most delicious, incredible thrill to, you know, it made having to go back to school okay, you know, because the new shows were coming on. Now, you know, it's like, man, there's no, that kind of excitement doesn't exist anymore. No. It just doesn't. These aren't events. These aren't, you know.
Not even the event is an event.
No. You can call it the event, and it's not an event. You know?
Can put a lipstick on an event, but it's still not an event.
But, you know, give me my Dexter. Give me my, you know, my damages. There's some good stuff. And it's just, you know, you just got to go find it. And it's still thrilling. I think, you know, the fact that we get to write about television, how lucky are we?
Mm-hmm.
How lucky are we that this is what we get to do?
Well, we are lucky, and we're going to be lucky when we have you on our Pop Confidential podcast soon, because Reagan loves those ABC Family shows.
Yeah.
On there, and y'all can dish the make it or break it, the secret life of all them pregnant teenagers who need to sit out somewhere and close their little legs.
Oh, listen, even the ones closing their legs are still doing it.
I told my little sister is going to be 14 soon, and I'm always asking her, what are you watching? Now, don't you watch those sluts on ABC Family? ABC Family. They're all pregnant.
They have the family part all right. Oh.
Family Planet. It needs to be ABC Family Planet.
Oh, my God.
Well, Michael, we love having you on.
You guys are so much fun. You're all so hilarious. And I just appreciate what you guys do.
Thank you.
You know, I really do. I salute you all and just keep doing it.
Thank you.
And you set the bar. I mean, you know, I've been reading you my whole life. I used to tell them all the time, TV Guide was the only one I could put on the stand and not have to lie and say it was for my sister like I had to do. So, Digest Weekly. You know, that was the only one I could say, okay, yeah, this is for me because everyone watches TV. But not everyone wants to know why Sheila is going to take Lauren's baby. But
you are so ridiculous.
You keep doing what you're doing also. And everyone, like we have to tell our readers this, but to find Michael's column and interviews online, you go to www.tvguide.com, and we'll be posting a link. And until next time, stay tuned.
So long.